So, today widgets.
Oh. Ugh.
From Relay FM, this is Connected, episode number 16. Today's episode of Connected is brought to you by our friends at lynda.com, where you can instantly stream thousands of courses created by industry experts. For a 10-day free trial, visit lynda.com/connected. Iconic, a fantastic book about Apple history and design and all of their fantastic products, and also by Hover, simplified domain management. My name is Mike Hurley. And as always, I am joined by Mr. Federico Vitici. Hi, Federico.
Oh, hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I am very well. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir.
Did you hear the Italian flair that I put on your name today?
Yeah, I know you've been exercising. Mm-hmm. You're taking secret Italian classes
in your spare time.
I don't know why, honestly. It's kind of creepy, but you know, it's okay.
I have an Italian vitamin supplement that I take every day. Mm-hmm. It's full of olive oil. I'm also joined by Stephen Haggett. Hi, Stephen.
No accent for me?
No.
That's, can you do a southern accent, Mike?
No.
That's weird because how it sound.
How it is, Stephen?
Oh, God.
How's that?
There's been a lot of conversation that you sound more American than you used to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely true.
100%
true. I don't know how do you feel about that? Is that weird? Like, are you saddened?
No, I'm fine with it.
But there are some things you say that are the way I say them. Like, you said something the other day on another show, and it was the exact same like inflection that I do, which is a little southern. I'm like, oh, I've ruined. Like, I feel guilty. for Americanizing you. And then you had Thanksgiving dinner, which. It's crazy. Like, I don't.
So, Mike, this new accent of yours, do you only use it on the shows? Or is it like a real life new accent that you have and you like, people are surprised?
No, this is
how does it work?
This is my real voice now. This is the voice that I have. I talk this way. I only try and enunciate a little clearer on the shows, but I do have a new voice. So, like, I was going through some old files the other day of shows. Mm-hmm. And it's like just this weird person.
Do you announce yourself to people in conversations like you do for each show?
Well, yeah.
My name is Mike Hurley and I'm joined today by my friends.
That's how I enter rooms.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Mike Hurley and I'm at the fridge. This dinner is brought to you by Heinz Tomato Ketchup.
Wow.
You know, that's new sponsor. That's how I live my life now.
I think cool. Your voice is also a little deeper, like a little
more gravelly.
A little it's more good. Gravelly.
I think it's that just old. Comes from talking so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't smoke. So, That's true. I guess it's just the podcasting. Yeah. Don't do podcasts, kids. It'll ruin your voice.
It's true. You need a patch when you're not podcasting to get the fix.
Yeah. Well, that's when I listen to podcasts.
Make sure it's a dynamic patch, though.
You need a Skype patch. Get it?
They were both excellent jokes, and it's just a shame that neither of you allowed each other to fully express them. So that's just how it is.
Thanks for the clarification, Mike.
No worries. Appreciate it. I just want you to both know that I appreciate your comedy.
You do?
Yeah.
That's I'm glad to hear that. You know, because I mean, last week we didn't do comedy.
We did.
No. No, we didn't, did we? We didn't do any of that. What are we migrating into a segment right now?
I think we're moving towards follow-up.
Follow-up.
Oh,
wow. It's back.
That was amazing.
Anytime.
It's like it came from space.
Came from Mars, baby.
Yeah,
nice.
We're going
nice.
To Mars. Humanity's going to Mars, guys.
Apparently so. That was a surprise, right?
I mean, not if you follow all the NASA blogs. Like some people might,
like
do.
Space nerds, like you.
Well,
is Steven a space nerd beside the OS X nerd?
Yeah, what's he likes space? Old space, like he likes old Macs.
It's true. Yeah, the Apollo was awesome. Space shuttle was dumb. Can I have a space podcast on the network? Oh, I don't need your permission. I'm going to do a space podcast. Let's do follow-up. So apparently there are apps that can make GIFs with burst photos.
No.
Which is something that we said well, okay, was not Mike. True.
No, basically, so I wrote these notes for myself. I didn't mean to write them for you. I apologize. I shouldn't have let you start this. Basically, this is on the subject of apps that can make GIFs with burst photos, which is something I was talking about last week.
But can't take existing burst and create GIFs. This is the most confusing outline I've ever seen.
It's not written for you. It's written for me. So I was talking about that last week, but there is an API that can do it. I have had this verified by smart people. I've spoken to smart people this week, and they have told me that this is definitely true. So people have been sending me in this week apps that they believe solve the problem that I am trying to... That I would like to be solved, but they don't. So there's two apps that have been sent in to me. One by Patrick Welker, called Giffer Pro, which is one of the worst looking applications I've ever seen. And
wow,
it's horrible. Just look at the link. And Camoji, yeah, which was sent into us by designer of everything Relay FM, Frank Towers. Basically, what these apps both do is they allow you to take either burst photos in the app and turn them into GIFs, or video and turn them into GIFs. None of these apps allow you to take existing burst photos and turn those into GIFs. That's what I'm
so the problem for. Is that you have many existing burst photos.
No, it's just if I take a burst photo, I am very rarely taking it with the purpose to make a GIF out of it. I'm taking it for a reason, and then later mm-hmm. then want to make it into a GIF. I don't really like apps like
oh, yeah?
Just in general, I don't like apps. I preferred them when they were programs. And
hey,
hey, buddy,
I see what you did.
No worries. I don't like apps that work as. What am I saying?
Oh. Mike, what is it that you don't like exactly? Okay.
So let's say it's something to do with a photo. I don't like it when you have to do everything in that one app. Like, I like to be able to take the output of the camera app and turn that into the thing. So it's not like, oh, I want to take this photo and make it a GIF. Let me go and find that app and open that app. I just want to take what the camera app gives me and turn that into a thing. Am I making any sense?
It kind of makes sense, yeah.
It's like I prefer to not be constrained just by mm-hmm. that one app and what that can
yeah,
do.
Yeah, because it means you can just use the Apple camera app and then you know, just send all these photos to different utilities depending on kind of what you want to make.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So it's not reliant on me like sandboxing it into that one application.
Yeah, I also have a problem with all these like specialized camera apps because I know that I'm going to use the Apple camera app anyway. You know,
yeah.
especially because of the control center shortcut. I don't yep. keep the camera icon on my home screen because I have the control center. Also kind of related to burst photos. I think I mentioned this before. I would love to have a burst mode for screenshots on iOS just to make there is.
Yes.
Screenshots?
Yeah, you have to use Google Plus. Which your response to that tweet was really funny. Oh yeah, Google Plus has some sort of app feature.
You can when you put photos into Google Plus, you can select a bunch of them and
oh yeah, but my problem is that I cannot take burst screenshots to begin with. Like imagine if you could.
It's got to be fast. Just boom, 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 boom. Yeah. you need a friend to come help you because your phone is too big.
Yeah. The screenshot friend. Yeah. Also, the ability to record screencasts on iOS, like you can with QuickTime on the Mac. And now people say, why don't you just use the Mac to take screencasts? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Whatever.
Do you want to know something weird about that? You know that the video thing. I don't know if you knew this, Federico, and mm-hmm. I hope that you don't know it, so I can give you a piece of information. So you know that when you're using QuickTime,
yes,
to record the screencast, and it does the thing where it cleans up the status bar for you.
Yes.
Did you know it actually does it on the device, not just
yes,
in the video?
Yes, it's done in real time. It's rendered on iOS. Yeah.
Which is so weird, isn't it?
It's awesome.
Oh, no, it's great that it does it. Yeah. But I plugged it and I was like, oh, it does it on my device,
yeah, it's
too.
Yeah, it's a private API that I know a few developers have tried to to make apps with that. And, of course, you know how that ends when you try to do private Apple stuff.
There's a button in your app. Remove it. Okay, we'll get to that later.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to have QuickTime on iOS. Please don't go. Please don't be upset, Mike. Don't be upset. I won't use it for podcasts.
You can have all of your apps on iOS. You just can't plug your devices in. So
yeah, but you don't like apps, right?
What you really need, you need a USB port on your
not again.
Your
iPad.
Or an SD card slot.
Yeah.
Or a serial port.
Oh, they should just have four home buttons, like one on every. Do you remember that when that was a thing?
Yeah, that
the
was
iPad's
an idea,
gonna get
right?
Two home buttons. No, it's not.
Yeah. No, it's really, it's really not. I don't know if you guys do this, but I have lots of problems when I use my iPad mini now because the power button is not where it is on my phone, and I use my phone a lot more. Like, I've already so quickly adjusted to the button layout on the phone that the iPad is just broken. I'm like, where's the button? I can't find the button. Like, it's very confusing. Yeah.
I struggle to either adjust the volume or lock my phone with one hand still, though. Like, I press both.
You bought the wrong phone.
Nope. The
okay, so you
same.
Guys wanna you guys want a quick teachy tip about adjusting to different devices?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So
I don't know why I'm nervous.
Okay, so here's my tip this week. Because I'm using the iPad in landscape mode when I'm at my desk and I use a Bluetooth keyboard to type. What I did is I set up my in the Touch ID settings. I set up my fingerprint in the in a different orientation so that when I'm at my desk, I can just hold my finger and I don't have to rotate it to unlock with Touch ID. So it kind of works even if you don't set up a different fingerprint in the settings. But if you do, it's faster because it doesn't have to think about it. So yeah.
So can I tell you that your tip is dumb?
But why
because
is it dumb?
On the Touch ID page, Apple says, I'm going to quote them.
Mm-hmm.
Place your finger on the home button and just like that, your iPhone unlocks. Touch ID is capable of 360 degree readability, which means
that,
no matter what orientation, your iPhone reads your fingerprint and knows who you are.
Okay, I'm going to test this live on the show.
Yeah, so try your thumb upside down.
Yeah, it works. Yeah,
totally works.
For me, after a while, it becomes like slow.
I can tell that it's your hands.
Yeah, you're sweating too much.
I don't have pasta.
Yeah.
I'm not sweating. I have perfectly.
I know why
stable.
It is. In a way, it is Federico.
Normal hands.
It's because you're working from the hot tub.
No.
So oh, yeah.
Not really. No,
have you ever tried to unlock your phone after taking a shower? It doesn't work.
I don't care what the Apple documentation says. You set up a second fingerprint.
How dare you, sir?
For iPad landscape usage, you're going to thank me. This is like when people told me, you don't have to set manual brightness. And then, battery life was better for many people. So,
my iPad doesn't have Touch ID because Mike talked me out of it.
I don't have manual brightness because I just don't have that.
So are we going to do this other thing?
I have a serious piece of follow-up real quickly. So of all the feedback that I got for the Twitter monitoring installed apps thing, that I said it wasn't a big deal. And, I still think that of all the stuff that companies can monitor, this is not a big deal in my opinion. Still, I got a lot of feedback, and of all the feedback that I got, the best counter argument to my point from a listener whose name I cannot remember. Basically, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. It's not personal. Basically said, what if I keep on my device apps that are related to my sexual orientation and I don't want, I don't want to tell anyone else yet.
That's
a great point.
Yep.
And I should have thought of that. And of all the feedback, that I got I think it's a big deal. Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal because such and such. This is the best practical and I guess fair point. So thanks for sending it over Twitter.
That is a very good point.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the Target thing, right? Yeah. Where Target sent an advertisement or something about diapers and like they didn't know, or like their parents didn't know they were pregnant or something. Like that thing where a company could know more than people is it's probably already true with a bunch of companies, but it's sort of a strange situation to think about. And it's a really good point. And it's not that Twitter is like publishing this, but it's the fact that they know and that you know, you might see ads based on that information, or it's you know, it's like, I think you said it last week, the idea that this is not information I'm putting into the system. This is information the app is getting on its own. Like, a lot of ramifications, and I'm sure there are even more that we haven't thought about, but it's good. Good feedback.
We've basically called an amnesty on this topic, because it's been a lot of discussion aimed at us this week about it. A lot of people agree with me. A lot of people agree with Federico. And me and Federico don't talk anymore because of it. So I'm kidding. So we're just, you know, it is what it is. This is just one of those things that we differ in opinion on. And I think that there are valid arguments on both sides. And I told Federico privately, and I'm going to say it on the show, when he posts his Twitter article, I am going to try and just use the Twitter app for as long as I possibly can and see how far I go.
So can I say something about the Twitter app itself and not the politics?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel the same way that I wanted to understand the app itself. So I have been using it a good bit the last couple of days. And my fundamental problem with it is that I just find it confusing coming from Tweetbot, where a tweet can be in several locations and like the replies and that sort of stuff, I think is... It's not so much about the UI itself, but that it's just there's a lot going on, and it can be disorienting at times of where I am in the timeline and what's going on. I have no idea what earns like the gray line and what doesn't earn the gray line. It's just a lot of elements going on that I think they need to simplify.
But if you like your tweets so much, why don't you want to see them more? Like, you know, that's the thinking, right?
I guess. And they... It's like Facebook, right? Like, no one actually sees the real Facebook timeline. It's about, you know, how they portray it. And I understand they're trying to make the content more interesting. And there's a lot of good stuff in the Twitter app. Like, I really like the, the screen name where you can see, like, what other people favorite and...
Activity?
Like, people fit... Activity. Yeah, that's really pretty neat. And it's a good way to, like... I don't have notifications on for favorites or anything. But it's nice to know, like... what's good, like how a tweet performs. Oh god, I hate myself. But there's good stuff in there. I just find it like sort of overwhelming. I don't even know what's happening. Maybe I'm just old.
Well, I'm if it matters, I'm already at 10,000 words, and I don't think I'm halfway through
Mike
the article.
Can't read that. Mike can't read that.
Yeah, I know. Mike, you can skip the sections you
That's
don't
longer
care
than
about.
My review of Yosemite.
Teach, can you call me on that day and just read it to me?
With my voice?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll be like an hour on Skype.
That's fine.
And I will read you my article about Twitter.
We can make it a B-side.
It's not only about the Twitter app. So this will be interesting. This is new for me. I'm pretty excited. Thought I will likely spend the weekend taking screenshots, which is going to be fun. I'm really excited.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be one of those weekends where you send us text messages asking us to do things for you, isn't it?
Yeah, like send me fake messages and stuff. Yeah,
I enjoy those though. I do enjoy. I enjoy trying to think of new things to send you to entertain the Mac Stories audience. Cause that's what I'm about. I'm an entertainer.
Oh, yeah? You're not a professional podcaster.
I was writing something the other day. I can't remember what it was, and I wanted to write that instead.
It should be on your business card.
I can't remember what it was, but it was something like that. And I was like, no, I want to say podcasters. Oh, that was it. I had an idea for a blog post about being a professional podcaster, and I wanted to call it professional podcasters.
You wanted to publish a blog post?
I wanted to, yeah. Yeah.
But what happened? What happened?
I calmed down.
Instead, you should have issued a bunch of posit tweets.
I should have done, actually. I had lots of posits that day.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
One of them was about lynda.com, who are an easy and affordable way to help individuals and organizations learn. With lynda.com, you get access to a growing library of hundreds of thousands of high-quality, well-produced video tutorials that can help you learn something new. Lynda.com can help you turn your ideas into hobbies, your hobbies into businesses. They can help you perfect something you've always wanted to know, or help you learn something totally new. Lynda works directly with experts in the fields that the videos and the subjects are about. They work with people that create hardware and software so they can give you the best training possible. And they work with people that create things. Like they work with David Allen on a GTD course. I just think that one's so awesome. Like it's like the perfect person. Their courses are broken down into bite-sized chunks. This allows you to jump in and out at your own pace, and Lynda allow you to create your own playlist so you can build a course schedule that meets your own personal needs. They have great iPhone, iPad, and Android apps, so you can watch videos when you're on the go. If you get their premium plan, you can download videos to your devices too, so you can like watch them on the plane or something. But if you have an internet connection on the standard plan, which is just $25 a month for unlimited all-you-can-eat access to Lynda's courses, with those apps, you'll be able to just stream the stuff. You can watch them on the bus. You can watch them when you're at home, wherever you're on Wi-Fi or on LTE or something like that. Lynda's courses are extremely varied, and they cover so many different types of hardware, software, computer stuff. It's not all computer stuff, too. They have, like, if maybe you want to learn how to take better photography, maybe you want to learn how to give better presentations. This isn't just in the software. They also can teach you practical skills, and they can also teach you, like, different ways to think, like time management and stuff like that as well. They have absolutely everything. If for some reason you've yet to try lynda.com or even go and look at their library, go right now to lynda.com/connected. That's lynda.com/connected. You'll see some, just a selection of the hundreds of thousands of videos they have, and you'll also get yourself a special extended 10-day free trial just for listeners of this show. Thank you so much to Lynda for the continued support of Connected and helping us out at Relay FM.
Michael,
mm-hmm.
You spent Monday, was it Monday?
It was Monday, yeah.
Doing a thing.
Uh-huh.
What did you do on Monday?
On Monday, I was at the Apple Store, Regent Street, moderating, well, I don't know why they call it moderating, because it was just one person. I was interviewing Neil McFarland, who is the director of games for Us Two Games, who you may know as the developers of Monument Valley. So I sat down with Neil and we spoke for about 40 minutes on video in the Apple Store Regent Street.
Wait, there's a video?
Yeah. Yeah. It's in full man. HD, baby. I've had some very concerned people tweeting me today. It's not normal for them to see me in video, but now you can see me on video if that's what you really wanted to do.
Let me take a look.
I got all spruced up. I was all spruced up. Thank you, Stephen, for calling me handsome. I appreciate that. It was a really interesting interview. It was a very different event. It was a great day because we were talking about like the Red stuff, you know, and it was actually World AIDS Day when I was there, and it was a very, very enjoyable experience. It was very different. There was a small audience. I had to do the standard interview. There was a Q&A part. There was only one question in the Q&A, so I had to come up with new questions just off the top of my head to ask, which was great. And it was a great honor. I met some great people that night, and I was very it felt fantastic to be in that environment and do something like that. And now it's available on the iTunes store.
Nice.
And I got a little plug for Relay FM in it to start as well.
I'm trying to find your face in the video, but
it's after like 30 or 40 seconds. They throw to me it right at the start.
Oh, I'm looking at your face here now.
There you go. Good.
Your face is moving. You're talking. You're very handsome, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nice, nice shirt, man. Nice.
I dressed up. I got my hair did. I got my beard did.
So strange to see your face, like with your lips moving.
Oh yeah, because I guess like because me and you have never.
Because
met
for me, like for me, your profile picture and your voice.
Yeah.
And the picture moving is kind of weird. You know.
So this is how people felt when they saw TV for the first time. So, Mike. as much as you can say, how did this...
Is that a pebble, Mike? Sorry, Steven. Yeah, that a pebble?
Yeah, pebble steel. Okay. You know I'm a pebble user. That's not a secret.
Okay. Mine is charging right now because it's dead. Anyways, Mike, how did this come about?
Well, originally it was meant to be Dan Gray, who is the executive producer. But unfortunately, he had to pull out at the last minute, so his boss, Neil, stepped in. Basically, Apple had asked us to if they would do this. They said yes. And usually there are guest moderators. I don't know what the standard protocol is for having a moderator, but because some videos from the Reading Street store have like celebrities interviewing app developers, right? So there's one of Stephen Fry. Well, I guess so. And then other than that, they have a guy from The Guardian who seems to do most of them. So maybe they give the offer, like, would you like to have someone? And Dan asked me if I would do it, and of course I said yes. And then I kind of corresponded with him and the people. There are actually people that work for Apple that are like, this is their job. They are the theater managers and the theater team of these events. Because, like, these events, they have huge celebrities. Like, there are videos from the Regent Street store of, like, Stephen Fry, Cameron Diaz. They have movie stars there. Like, they had John Hamm there a couple of weeks ago. Then they basically said to me, prepare your questions. So I did that. And got there on the day, and we sat in the not fancy green room and talked through some things with Neil, and then we got up on stage and I did my thing.
You should have talked about photo management.
I tried to, but they kept threatening me from the side of the stage, so I had to stop.
You should have pushed the Relay agenda on stage.
I kind of did right at the start. I said I was from Relay FM, so.
And then a poison dart came out of the back and hit Mike in the in the neck. So Daniel was on episode 14 of Inquisitive, which if you haven't listened to is really good.
Yeah.
I love Monument Valley, although I'm currently angry with the red level because I'm stuck. But it's a great game, and like listening to the interview, and then I haven't watched your video yet. It just came out today. But like they really care about it in a very deep way. And it really shows in the game, right, that they sweat every single little detail. And it's cool. It's cool that you got an interview. Congratulations on
Congrats, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, Neil has some really cool stuff to say. So it's really interesting to watch. Even if you've listened to the video I did with Dan, like Neil has some other stuff to say. And they also they talk through a couple of levels. Like they demo them, and me and Neil are talking about what's happening in the levels. As they're happening, so it's pretty cool. There's a lot of good stuff in there, actually.
Is it weird to interview somebody when you could see them?
I thought it would be, but it wasn't. It was very easy.
Wait, does that mean you can see me now? Are all the podcasts secretly video podcasts?
Well, I have like little dolls made of you all, and I just sit them in front of me when I'm talking, so usually it's fine.
Mike, is it fair to say that you are now a professional videocaster?
It is fair, actually. I'm going to take that. I'm now a professional vlogger as well as a podcaster.
I mean, it's a heck of a way to start.
Yeah, pretty big bang initially. I don't really know how I'm going to follow that up, but I'll find a way.
Some people are creationist. Anyways, topic. Are we ready for topic 0.5? What has happened to our topic numbers, by the way? So that was topic 0.3. Uh-huh. The next is 0.5. The next after the next ad read is 0.6. We don't have it. Well, we have one topic one.
Yeah, well, we have taken the Google Chrome versioning number.
Yeah, we should go back to the Facebook where everyone just has a normal number.
Topic 20.
Aren't they? They're version like 19 now, I think.
This is probably technically like topic 416 or something like that, but.
Oh, yeah, we should have counted from the beginning.
Uh-huh, that would have been great. But
we should have somebody download all the prompt episodes and do that. We could just have a running tally.
Count all the topics.
You know that's going to happen, right? Eventually.
Maybe.
Like what? People like our dear listeners will do some sort of workflow to count the episodes.
Can't you do something like this in editorial?
No. Because you don't support chapters. In the file.
Please don't.
Stop.
Don't you dare. Don't do this to me, man.
Okay.
I had, like, basically everybody in Germany tweet me, like, a week ago telling me to do it.
In Germany?
What? Germany is so, very much about order. They want sectioned files.
A listener from Germany tweeted me and said that he wanted me to add chapters, and I said that not enough people want it. It's not something that I'm interested in doing. And he was like, loads of people want it. And I said to him, if you get 1,000 people to tell
no,
me
no way.
That you
why
want...
Why did you do that?
Because I thought it wouldn't happen. I said to him, you get 1,000 people to tell me that you want chapters, that they want chapters, I'll do it.
Did he start a petition?
He basically tweeted a few times and got other people to tweet. And it was just effectively, it was just a bunch of people from Germany and other places
and
in
you
Europe.
Were just watching
just all,
these all
night. Like for 2 days. Like they didn't get to 1,000. It was maybe no more than 100. But they just kept coming in and they were like, yeah. And there was like people were like issuing tweets that were like, if you want chapters in Real FM shows, you got to tweet at Mike and tell him this. And I'm like, oh, what have I done? It was. It felt like so much fun to me at the time.
I appreciate you not dragging me into that.
Yeah, no, that was solely my thing to deal with. Perfectly fine. I made it.
Still, guys, we have a topic.
So we talked a lot about Twitter last week, mm-hmm. and
we did.
Federico has put a question. I assume this was Federico.
No, I did it. I did it.
I was not, I apologize, I was not on top of the notes this week.
Nope.
What would we want from a new social network now to replace Twitter?
Let me set this up then for while I was thinking this. So okay. I actually was also talking to this today with Gino Trapani on Inquisitive. It's not posted yet, but it will be over time. This is out. Anyway, I was thinking, like, what... The problem that we have is, you know, and we spoke about this, we're, like, stuck in Twitter, right? No matter whether we love it or hate it, there's kind of nothing we can do because this is where we are. We're kind of stuck in this now. This is our thing. You know, app.net died because we wouldn't all move over there. Like, we went there, but we didn't move. So we're kind of like in this scenario where this is where we are. So, you know, my thinking be the only way that we can break away from Twitter is that something has to replace it, right? Because we all kind of love this community that we have and we want to go there. So what do we want? What does a social network need to do, and what do we want from one that would make it like the perfect social network? That we wouldn't have any problems with it, and it would be awesome, and we would be happy to be there. So I broke this down to a few things. So, like, what features do we want? Like, who needs to be there? Like, how many of our friends, or like, what types of friends? Do we just want our nerds? Do we want celebrities? Do we want real friends? Do we need them all? What do we want the company's values to be? Do we want there to be apps like that are made first party or third party? And what does the API need to look like? They're kind of like the basic sort of areas that I wanted to explore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for me, I'll start it off.
Okay.
I would quite like something which is more of a combination between Twitter and Instagram. So I don't want like a Facebook, but I want, in essence, text to be... it to be like mainly text. I don't want to go all the way up to 256 characters because it's too much, but maybe a little bit more than 140. I love all of the mechanics of Twitter, so at replies, hashtags, all of that sort of stuff. But I would like images to be supported greater. So maybe to look a little bit more like the Twitter app with cards, for example, you know, but like for there to be more photo features built right in because it's like a big thing that you share. And I think for me, that's like kind of the perfect type, like feature set. And I would, for me to be there, I would just need my nerdy friends. I'm totally cool with celebrities not being there. I'm totally cool with like my real life friends being there. Like there are other social networks where that can occur, but I want like, you know, the bloggers that I enjoy and the podcasters that I enjoy and like my friends that I have because of this stuff, you know, like the people that I've met and become acquainted with because of this type of stuff. I would like all of those people to be there so I can basically replicate the type of discussion that I see every day. For the company itself, like, a lot of things don't really bother me. I would like the company's business model to just let me pay. Ideally, that's what I would like to do, and I would pay a relatively large sum of money. You know, I'd probably pay like $25 to $30 a month. I would pay for a service like that if it meant that it would stay around forever and wouldn't be like changed in ways that we don't want. I don't care if they have advertising as long as they're very clear about the way that they do the advertising. and they don't like take any data that I am unhappy, like, that I wouldn't want to give them, and that sort of stuff. Like, you know, paying and getting advertising is not necessarily that much of an issue for me as long as it kind of fits. With apps, there should be a first-party application, in my opinion, for us, for a network like this, so it can show people what they think should be done in the same way that, like, Apple's apps exist, right? They're like, this is how we think it should be done. You can choose whether you want to do it like this, but we are setting the standard of this is how minimum how good our apps need to be. And I would want there to be an API that was very much like the Twitter of old, which basically allowed people to have access to everything. They could get into everything. Nothing is closed off. Like, there's no features that the official app that has that the API couldn't have, and that kind of thing. So it's for me, it's like a mix between like the third party world and Twitter of old, like, and maybe a little bit of app.net sprinkled in here and there.
Sounds like you described app.net. Actually,
yeah. Well, I did, yeah, because that's kind of what they were doing, right? Like,
yeah.
Because in theory, like, this is the whole thing. Like, in theory, app.net was perfect. It was perfect. But they came up in theory. Jesus. No, that's what I'm saying. In theory, like, it was everything in theory that we would have wanted a service to replace Twitter to be, right? Because it kind of had all of the things that we wanted, and it combated things we were unhappy about. The problem was we didn't move.
It was just full of geeks.
That's what I mean. Like, if everybody moved, like, that's what I mean. Like, in a perfect world, app.net was perfect because it gave everything that we wanted, didn't give us the stuff we didn't want, and allowed us to pay for it, and had a great API. And, like, there was a great app ecosystem, right? In theory, that was what people had said that they'd wanted from Twitter for years. And I think that
it lacked the diversity of Twitter, like...
But that's what I'm saying.
Only people talking about tech.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. It's like it in a perfect world, so everyone moving, if basically you took Twitter's entire user base, lifted them up, and put app.net below them and lowered them back down again, it's perfect. That's what I'm saying. Like, you needed to have done
that. You won't get people to pay for these kind of service.
I know. I understand that, but like, I'm just saying, like, in a perfect world, that's what I'm saying.
Well, so I think there's a lot of interesting things in there. One, and as you were talking about it, I was reminded of a tweet that we got yesterday about, basically the tweet was like, why did Twitter make the API in the API in the first place? It just set the stage for the showdown. And it's like, that's a really interesting idea. And Twitter was an API first because that's what internet companies do. Like, Twitter would not have enjoyed the quick rate of success that it had if it weren't for third party apps. Because Twitter didn't even have a first party app until much, much later, until they bought Tweety and rebranded it. And, you know, app.net followed the same course. They had an API and a website, and they let people build apps on top of it. And some great apps came out of that space. Where Twitter is now is they're trying to reel that back in and say, you know, no, like, the API is sort of not what we want to do. Everybody wants to be in the first party app. And that's where that's the whole explosion that happened on this show last week stems from, that transition. And I think that transition is inevitable on social networks. I think Facebook is the notable exception, that Facebook was a website, and then they eventually had mobile apps, but Facebook really never had a full feature. Like, you couldn't, like, write a Facebook client. You could interact with Facebook in certain ways, but you couldn't build a full-fledged client because their product was not the API. Their product was the website first. And I think Mike.net or whatever, this fanciful
totally
social network. Yeah, Mike.net. Like, that's that friction point, like, that friction point always has to be answered with web services. Do you do an API or do you do a product? Because an API ultimately is not a product. It can serve as a product for a little while, but what it's going to become is a gateway for people to take control of what you think your product should be. That's exactly what happened with Twitter. It's why people are freaking out about it now. And so, like, in this idea of, like, what does a future social network, what does that look like? anything where a single company controls the API has the potential to fall into the quagmire that is Twitter today. You know, you look at things like tent.is, you know, these decentralized social networks, or even email, which is maybe perhaps the first decentralized, well, definitely not the first, but a decentralized social network, you know. Bulletin boards back in the day, anyone could sign up for any bulletin board, you could run your own bulletin board. Those are more flexible because you can do whatever you want, but the technical debt or the technical limitations are higher. Like Twitter's really easy, Facebook is really easy. You go on a website and you sign up, right? Like all of us have done it, all of our parents have done it, not a big deal. But you look at something that's like decentralized that you have to like find a server and join, and there might be like username issues or, you know, it's messy. Like that's ultimately better perhaps, but more complicated and therefore less likely to succeed.
Can I share my thoughts?
You can.
Please.
This is going to upset you both.
Here we go.
So I guess we need to have a talk about how normal people perceive software, especially this kind of social software that most people want to use in the world. So I'm just going to say that most people don't care about open source and decentralization of software. They couldn't care less about APIs using different apps. They just want a free service that lets them sign up with a username and a password and a mobile app, and that's it. They don't care about, is this social network decentralized? Does it let me set up my API? Does it let me use apps from multiple developers? They don't care. And I think that the success of Facebook and Twitter and other, I guess, many other products such as Internet Explorer or Google Chrome, or I'm trying to think of any other popular app, Skype, Spotify, they show that people don't care about the political fairness of software in this way. Like the idea of a social network that is decentralized and that it has a stable and fair API is just a nerd fantasy. And that's appealing to us because it seems it sounds fair and technically intriguing to us, but people don't care about this stuff. And I believe that with the current Facebook and Twitter, we are kind of close to the perfect social network that people want in the world. I think that, I mean, Facebook is now 10 years old, I guess, and Twitter is what, like 8 years old. The fact that new services haven't been able to come around and replace them, I think it kind of shows that the ideas behind Facebook and Twitter are solid, you know? And maybe there's a bit of contamination between both because Facebook wants to be more like Twitter and Twitter wants to be a little more like Facebook. But still, I think that they still have plenty of room to improve and discover, like release new features, Facebook and Twitter. I honestly don't see how at this point a new player could come around with a revolutionary idea or feature and convince the entire planet to switch. That said, I'm not saying that 10 or 20 years from now, there won't be, you know, another Facebook or Twitter or whatever. I'm just saying that today, today to me especially, they seem to be doing just fine, you know, because people don't want more, I guess, from Facebook and Twitter. And if anything, look at all these new messaging apps that millions of people use, WhatsApp and Line and iMessage. None of these apps, which can be considered social networks in a way, they don't have decentralization, they don't have an API. Not even Apple, who promised to make iMessage an open standard, made it an open standard. So this is just, you know, we want the perfect service. It's like one of those videos that you find on YouTube about the perfect smartphone. And it's like just a bunch of features taken from all the popular smartphones. So I want the body of an HTC and I want the camera of an iPhone and I want the GPU of another Android phone. That's just a fantasy that will never happen or be practical in practice. Practical in practice. Nice, teachy. So for me, if I had to pick between Twitter and Facebook, because come on, Google Plus, really. Twitter and Facebook, I would say Twitter is closer to my taste, but there'll still be like improvements that I would like to see in Twitter. Like I totally agree with Mike when you mentioned the photos. I especially when it comes to the quality of photos and the fact that you can, you know, you can have these basic effects and filters, but they're not really like serious filters or effects. It's like, it feels like a plugin into the Twitter app that's not really part of the core experience. So I totally agree with the photos. I also think that Twitter should find new ways to, like, if I'm not interested into, you know, American politics or like sports or other events, there should be better ways to, I don't know how, but to modify the timeline when there's a major event that you care or do not care about. Because I think that puts a lot of friction when you want to follow people on Twitter, but you're not interested in a special topic or, you know, an event or something. I'm glad to see that Twitter is doing, you know, is launching new features and tools to block people, to report people for harassment and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, it's about time. And I think that as more people keep using and start using public, you know, social products, it's extremely important to be able to let people control their experience and report other users. I've thought about, like, and then I'll finish with this segment. I thought about, like, for me, one of the big things in the Twitter app is being able to preview content in tweets. So I'm thinking about, you know, the Twitter cards and the fact that they give you these previews of, like, articles on the web. They give you a preview of videos, SoundCloud audio, iTunes previews sometimes. So I think that ideally, my perfect social network would have a much, much broader and more integrated approach to this, like being able to extract information from other from links or other like sources and show me more context. Like, I don't want to just see a link in my timeline. I want to be able to see what's inside that link without necessarily opening that link. And Twitter is getting close to this idea with cards. And also another product that does this pretty well is Slack, with all the integration and the snippets that they put into the chat rooms. So ideally, my social network would be able to do this with any kind of external link or resource or piece of content that is put into my timeline. But really, I cannot think of any other... I really don't think that a company like up.net or like our idea of a social network that is kind of like Twitter, but also more like up.net because of the API and the monetization could ever happen practically, because people, they don't want to pay. And because when you, also my last point, because when you release an API and you allow just about any developer to create apps, and if you really want the entire population of Earth to use your service and you make a first-party app, eventually and inevitably, you are going to compete with developers. And at that point, because you're the platform owner, you're going to put exclusive features and, you know, into your app, because you want people to use your app, because you want to make money. Because I cannot think of any service, and correct me if I'm wrong, any popular public social service that is free and open source and nobody profits, and and everybody, billions of people use it, and every day, like Twitter or Facebook or Google search or Spotify or whatever, or iTunes, like all the major products are done with profit in mind in some way. And that's my problem. The idea of an API decentralization is romantic. It's awesome. It's beautiful. It just doesn't scale.
Well, look, you've not said anything I don't know. My point was not about building.
Snap.
No, I mean, like, you know, you were saying about, like, the start of your conversation was like, that won't work because, like, that's not what regular people want. Like, I know that. Like, my point was, this is what I think is my perfect social network. It's not the way to build one because it won't work. But that this is what my perfect social network looks like. That it's kind of app.net with a sprinkle on top, effectively. But I mean, I understand that it can't work, and I know the reason that app.net failed was because nobody moved and no one's going to pay. And like that's just how these things are.
Yeah.
But don't you wanna have a more what's the name? Like something that will happen as a wish. Don't you wanna hope for something real?
Well, I know I'm not going to get anything that's better than what we have, because the way that the it's like, you know, what am I going to get? Like, I'll just take Twitter as it is, please. Just leave it as it is.
That's, you just want a non-profit, like,
well, it's never going to happen.
For
like,
good
so
social network.
It's just a pure wish, because it's, you know, Federico's right. Like, there can't be something that does the things that I want it to be, because the business model doesn't work. Well, it does work at scale, but it doesn't work to make people feel rich, and that's what people care about.
I totally get it. It's just that if you think about it that way, that you know will never happen, but that's what you want, you'll be, like, sad and disappointed, and
well,
I don't want you
sad.
To be sad.
I am sad already.
No, please don't be.
I am, because I like it the way, you know, this, we're going back to last week. I like it the way I like it, and people are changing it.
I think you should change your fantasy so you'll be happier.
Fantasies. Adjust your dreams, sir, and you will be a happier man. This episode of Connected is also brought to you by our friends at Hover. Hover are like a fantasy. They're a dream of mine because they make it perfectly easy and lovely and beautiful to buy domain names. It's been my place of choice for years. It's the place of choice for everybody that I know, and that's simply because Hover make it easy for you to buy domain names without being hassled. They don't send you emails every week reminding you about that domain that's going to expire in 9 months' time. They don't try and upsell you every time you go to their website. They don't show you, you know, Hover ads every time you log in to your Hover dashboard. They don't do any of this stuff because they believe in treating their customers right. When you go to Hover and you look for a domain, you type in some keywords or you type in the domain that you're looking for. They'll tell you if it's available or suggest some things that you can get from their over 200 TLD options. And then you can pick what you want to buy. They have all of the stuff you expect, like .com, .co, and .me, .net. They also have .xyz, .diamonds, .steven. If that existed, if there was a .steven, Hover would have it. And they do all of this at very fair prices. They're, for example, their .com domains start at $12.99. They include Whois Privacy for free. This comes to the standard of all of Hover's domains. This also includes, you know, their fantastic customer support as well. They have a no-hold, no-wait, no-transfer telephone support policy. They have fantastic email support too. They have great documents and guides on their website. And don't forget Hover's valet service, where they take all of the hassle of switching from your current provider, because they do it all for you. If you're with some terrible Acme domain registrar and you want to move over to Hover, you just contact Hover, you give them the information that you need, and they will transfer for you for free. Go to hover.com right now to try them out. Use the code PebbleForever at checkout and you'll get 10% off your first purchase at hover.com, and show your support for Connected and all of Relay FM. That's PebbleForever, all one word. Thank you so much to Hover for sponsoring this week's episode.
It occurred to me that I've become the bad guy on this show.
You're
lately.
Evil. You are the. You are
I don't
evil.
Like it.
You are the
I
villain.
Don't like it.
You are the villain.
No.
You are against platform development. You like restricted environments, and you believe in selling people's information. And that's
no,
where you're going to tell
don't.
Me that you switched back to Chrome now, right? That's what this topic is
about.
I'm
a realist. I'm a realist.
I know. Federico, you just don't want to be disappointed like I'm going to be disappointed.
Yes, I want to live a happy life with no disappointments,
stop.
And I want to use
stop it.
No, we're not going to stop. There's nothing you
I'm
can
so,
do.
I'm so sad.
Don't be sad. Let's talk about browsers.
Steven used to be the sad guy because of all the dead Macs and stuff. And now I'm the bad guy.
You're not a bad guy.
And you're the sad one. And Steven,
I'm a sad guy.
Steven is happy now. He has an iPad. I mean, what has this show become? I don't know.
Hey, guys, let me tell you about my workflows.
Steven, do you like espresso lately?
I would like to tell a story.
Okay.
So today, earlier today, I get a message from Federico. He says, hey, let's talk about browsers on the show. I said, hey, that's great. So I opened
no,
the document.
No, you said cool. And I quote.
I said, cool. Yeah. Well, I was in a, you know what I mean. So I assumed, like, yeah, I wonder about, like, what browsers we use on OS X and why that's true. And then I opened the topic and it's browsers on iOS, which I am not prepared for at all. Just showing the difference between my world and yours.
Well, okay. This came up because of a conversation me and Federico had have been having over the last couple of days. So maybe
Who allowed that to happen?
We have secret messages.
iMessage.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is where we plot our social network. You can imagine how terrible it goes. So basically, Federico over the last couple of days has been highlighting on Mac Stories a couple of great apps that take advantage of reading the iOS Safari DOM. It's this new thing. You know how you like how Bing does the translation thing? Well, there's a great app called Stax, which just came out, and which is a currency converter. And what it can do with its extension in Safari is it can take all of the currencies or the monetary amounts, I can't think of the word, prices, there you go, all of the prices of products on a website, and it can do in-page conversion and replace them with your currency of choice, which is freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. And there was another app as well, right, Federico? What was the other one you were telling me about? Or is it not out yet?
Well, I showed you the font app.
So this is an app that can identify fonts on a web page. He was saying to me, hey, would you like this app? And I was like, does it work in Chrome? I said, no. So this is what we wanted to talk about. So I am a Chrome user. I've mentioned this before. I use Chrome on the desktop, and I use Chrome on iOS because I like to have the same browser because there are interesting benefits to that. I'll get into that in a minute. Federico used to be a Chrome user, I know. Mm-hmm. And then he moved to Safari a while ago. I'll put a link in the show notes to Federico's
very publicly moved to Safari.
Yep. So there's a great post that Federico wrote about his reasons for doing that. And then, as I had feared, as time has gone on into iOS 8, there are now a bunch of apps which are extensions that take full support of the powerful stuff that can happen inside of Safari only. Chrome can use extensions, but it can't do the reading of the DOM. I know I'm saying this incorrectly. I know I'm saying something wrong, but you get what I'm trying to say.
Sounds like a chapter of the Bible, honestly.
Okay, I'll try DOM manipulation now instead, because that also sounds interesting. Chrome can do a bunch of things, like I can clip stuff to Evernote and all that sort of stuff, but it can't do the reading and the whatever. So Federico was saying to me, why do you use Chrome? And then we decided, let's talk about it on the show. So I'm a Chrome user on the desktop because of Google Apps primarily. I use Google Drive constantly. I'm in it all day. I have a whole different window set up with just full of tabs, and it's just Sheets and Docs and Drive and everything. It's all there. Now, I know I could run Chrome separately for this and have like just Chrome as like the Google Drive app that runs. But if I'm going to use one browser, I like a consistent experience. So, you know, my history is saved and all the tabs are saved and stuff like that. Because, for example, quite frequently, I'll click a link that's in a show document and there'll be a page that's come up, and then I might want to read it somewhere else later or bring it up on the other machine so everything's in sync, right? Because sometimes I will have something on the MacBook Pro and then I bring it up on the production machine to play a city sound effect or something like that. So if I'm going to use any browser, I just want it to be the same browser. So some other stuff is I really like on iOS the support that Google has for X callback URL. So a frequent thing where this pops up is I'm in Mailbox and I go out to a link that's in an email, and then I press the button on the top left and it closes a tab and takes me back to Mailbox. Same with Tweetbot. There's a bunch of apps that do this. Google Chrome will open directions for me in Google Maps, which I also use. So Google has, in my opinion, with third-party apps on iOS, a better relationship. It shares information better. It takes you around the OS a lot better, because at Safari, you just end up in Safari and then you have to go back your own way to the app. Also, Safari on iOS's tab view makes me want to stab my eyes out. I think it's horrific. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like that it's just this endless spinning thing. Like sometimes I go to Safari and I'm like page. Like I'm just like spinning down this Rolodex of tabs. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. It's just not to my taste. So they are the reasons that I use Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
Steven, what do you do? Is Steven out of this conversation completely?
I don't know.
Hey.
Hi.
Oh, are we still
on? Do you want to talk about iOS stuff, man?
I have a lot of things to say.
Okay.
First off, I totally get that Google Apps is better in Chrome. Like, it just is. the like web nerd in me is saddened by that, because I think that your browser should be your choice and not the choice of whatever. Like, Chrome is so like could totally be the new Internet Explorer. It's a little scary, especially from a development perspective. There's a lot of stuff that Google's doing that only works in Chrome or is Chrome first. But we've talked about that. So, I have Chrome. Actually, I don't anymore. I used to have Chrome installed on iOS when I used Chrome more heavily on the Mac. But like Federico, have gone back to Safari mainly because of the desktop, as you might imagine. That Chrome is just really rough on battery life on notebooks, and that's important to me. I use my notebook a lot out and about during the day, and Safari gives me, sometimes hours of battery life back. And so I don't love Safari in Yosemite. I think that everything being centered is dumb. I think that transparency is dumb. I think that there's a lot of things in Safari that aren't very good in Yosemite, but it's fast and it's easy on battery. And so I've moved back to it on the Mac, and because of that, like, I've always used Safari as my primary browser on iOS, but using it on the Mac, you get all that integration with iCloud tabs, and it's just a tighter experience if you're using the same browser everywhere, and for me, I like the way the Safari does that better. So
I actually agree with Steven.
What a surprise.
Like entirely.
Okay.
Yeah, so I switched to, I was a huge Google Chrome fan, and then I switched to Safari for all the reasons that I mentioned in the article. I don't want to go over those again. So let me just talk to you, Mike, about Safari.
Please do.
So my main reason is actually three reasons. Yes, it's a main reason in three. It's a main reason in three parts.
Okay.
Okay, iCloud tabs, really nicely integrated with the system. I love the simplicity. I don't have to do anything. They are one of the fastest and most reliable parts of iCloud. So congratulations to the engineer who wrote iCloud tabs. The second, Spotlight Suggestions in the Safari address bar on iOS, and I guess also on Yosemite, though I don't know for sure. I really like the suggestions for websites and maps directions. I especially like Spotlight Suggestions for Wikipedia entries. Because
it's so helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Usually, like, the first, like, I want to know when someone was born, and like Spotlight Suggestions in Safari, like, they give you the first like two sentences, and most of the time those are enough. I don't even have to open Wikipedia. Or if I want to, you know, Google someone's name, I don't have to see Google, because Safari takes me directly to Wikipedia if I want to tap the page, which is handy. And the third reason, obviously, is better support for extensions. I want to be able to use all these new extensions that can interact with the contents of a web page, and because those are really practical for me. Like, because I don't basically use my Mac anymore, so that's not really a joke anymore. It's the truth. I'm using my iPad, so I mean, whatever, right? And I want to be able to do stuff, and on the Mac it's really easy if you want to say print a page to PDF, or clip a web page to Evernote or to Pinterest, or, you know, other services that take content from web pages and save it elsewhere. And on iOS, I need extensions for this. And since iOS 8, there's been a great collection of new apps and extensions that integrate only with Safari. So this is a nice benefit for me, because I can use stuff like PDF converter from Riddle to generate PDFs. The other extensions that you mentioned, Mike, those are awesome. So yeah, these are the main reasons. There are other little touches that I like the bookmarks menu with the huge large icons, the favicons, whatever. Those are really handy. And I like the Safari Reader feature, especially when I go to websites for music lyrics, which tend to be awful and terrible, and my God, who designs those websites? I don't know. With Safari Reader, I can get a cleaner visualization of lyrics, which I like, so I can sing better.
Always
and
good.
I can, yeah, I can practice my English and my songs. So, yeah, I really like Safari. I think it's my favorite Apple app on iOS. Hmm. So, yeah.
So I think they're all valid things. And, like, you know, the extensions thing is what makes me sad. But I think some of the things that I like about Chrome, they don't exist in Safari, right? So, like, that's... If I like those things as much as I think I do, which is, you know, one of the main reasons I use Chrome, I kind of have to deal with one thing or the other. Right? I either have to deal with the subpar extension support because there's nothing Google can do about some of it, or I have to kind of deal with losing features from my web browser. And like some of them, like the X callback URL stuff, it would frustrate me so much, like just on a daily basis, like to have it and to because I rely on it, which is funny that now what is happening to this show? I am now relying on anyway.
Can I ask you a question, Mike?
Yeah.
So do you think that, I mean, because you do most of your work at your Mac, so you use all these desktop web apps in Chrome?
Do you know what, Federico? I actually don't know if that's true. I do a lot, like, but it's not most. It's still not most. Like, I'm out and about a lot. I still do a significant amount of work from my iPhone.
Okay. So if you didn't do a lot on the Mac, or if Safari on the Mac had better support for Google stuff, would you also use Chrome on iOS? Or would you switch to Safari?
I think I would be more inclined to try it. Like, if Apple came out today or Google came out today and they were like, it's totally fixed, guys, go crazy, I would try Safari out in a more, like, I would give it more of a go.
Yeah,
because
that
is the main sticking point for me.
Yeah.
It's like, I need it to be perfect. I can't have problems in it because basically our business runs in Google Drive. Like, many points rely on it.
And on iOS, you have native apps for Google stuff. So you don't really need Chrome on iOS for the web apps part that you have on the Mac.
No. Although I just want to say, just for the point of complaining, still have not been updated for the sixes.
Yeah, it's really super gross.
I do not understand what Google are doing. Like, I cannot fathom why it hasn't been done yet. Like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, it's like Spotify, still not updated for the iPhone 6.
Like, what is going on? Like, what is going on?
I mean, I can understand, like, the first few weeks you say, okay, yeah, developers didn't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of Christmas now, so you don't know.
But, you know, we're talking about a company with the resources, like, of Google.
Google and Spotify. And
but, like,
there's
especially,
another big one.
Like, especially Google.
Especially,
like,
Google, yeah.
It's like, I mean, Apple not doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's insane. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, you know, the Google Drive stuff is the biggest point, and then the other points are just like conveniences that I like about Chrome over Safari. But yeah, there you go. That's why.
Very nice.
This episode of Connected is also brought to you by Iconic. I'd love to tell you about Iconic. It's a very cool coffee table book. It's a book all about Apple. The background of it is that back in 2009, a guy named Jonathan Zuffi collected and photographed pretty much every single Apple product ever made, well, since 1976, and produced this stunning coffee table book. It's called Iconic, a photographic tribute to Apple innovation. If there was ever a perfect gift for the Apple fan this holiday season, this is it. 350 beautifully designed pages and hundreds of fantastic photos of basically every product Apple has ever made. Every desktop, laptop, iDevice, printer, even the old gaming devices. It's all in here, and I'm going to guarantee that you're going to see some products that maybe you didn't even know Apple made. I know that I felt that way when I looked through the book. I was like, oh, here's some weird stuff in beige boxes that Stephen probably knows all about, but I didn't. There's an amazing chapter in there about prototypes. There's even a chapter all about the packaging, which was one of my personal favorites about the book. It's to look through and see all of the boxes, because I'm one of those Apple box hoarders, and I have, like, just every box of every iPod I've ever owned, and just, you know, all that kind of stuff. And and I was flicking through the books and seeing, like, I was able to point out the products from my history. So, like, there's my iPod, and they even had a picture of a pink iPod mini in there, right? That was the device that got me into this stuff. Looking through all the beautiful photos of the newer stuff, the new iPhones, you know, the iPods as it goes through history, and kind of looking and being like, you know, I remember all those products. And I'm sure Stephen, when he looks at the book, he starts from much earlier in the book and looks at all the stuff that he's a fan of, because Stephen's very, very old. Iconic also includes a foreword by Steve Wozniak and hundreds of amazing quotes from other Apple pundits. It really is something. The book comes in a few different versions, including a version in a bookcase that looks like an old Apple floppy drive, and a new Ultimate Edition that ships in a white clamshell of an embedded glowing standby light that pulses like the old sleep indicators on the MacBook Pros. I'm being totally serious. It's really worth seeing. So if you go to iconicbook.com, you can take a look at it. You can order the Classic Edition at Amazon, but if you decide you want the Classic Plus, Special, or Ultimate Editions, enter the code CONNECTED when you check out for a 10% discount. That's iconicbook.com, promo code CONNECTED. Thanks to Iconic Book for supporting this week's episode. What about that, right?
It's seriously maybe the favorite book.
Yeah, I have one, and I gotta say, it's full of Macs, but man, is it a great book.
I want the glowing one, man. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I wish I would have waited. I want something that's gonna glow at me.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool, right? Pretty cool.
Pretty cool, yeah.
So, today widgets.
Oh.
Apple, what are you doing?
Okay.
So, yeah, so friend of the network, and
previous sponsor on last week's episode,
previous sponsor and really, really friend of the world. Greg Pierce, the developer of Drafts, issued some tweets on the Twitter social network, and basically it boils down to his Today extension, which allowed you to create like a new notes or open the app directly from Today. Apparently Apple is not going to allow him to move forward with that. And furthermore, to that, basically, the Today view, from what he has been told, is for like glanceable information, not for interaction. And so he expects that like Evernote's extension, which if you have installed, allows you to create a new note or a new audio recording, like really helpful stuff, not so much allowed anymore, apparently, which is not awesome.
Doesn't make any sense.
because Apple has allowed this
crazy people to run app review
to happen, and this is like a month after the pCalc drama, right?
So yes.
pCalc shipped with basically a version of pCalc that ran in Today, and they say no, you can't do it. The developer says no, I can't do it, and then the internet exploded, and then Apple said, oh no, you can stay, it's not a problem. And it's very back and forth and very not cool. So,
yeah.
So Federico, out of us, I think you are using Today widgets the most. Like,
I think Mike also uses.
Yeah, I use them a lot as well. I don't use the Drafts one. I don't know why. I'm looking at it now, and oh, there's some buttons in here, guys. Oh,
it's dangerous for the platform.
I cannot believe they've allowed these buttons. Like, so there were, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Neato was removed from the App Store, and that one I kind of get, because it was like it created a fake keyboard, right? So it's like, okay, guys, come on now. I understand what you're doing, but how did you ever think that they were going to let you do this? If Apple didn't let you have a keyboard, don't create a keyboard. But you know, it was. But the frustrating thing for them is they were allowed in the store, and it didn't hide anything. Like, this is our app. Our app creates a keyboard. These are our screenshots that show the keyboard in Notification Center that we have created, right? And that was a you know. So where that app maybe wasn't the smartest thing to do, like, it makes sense in a way. Maybe why Apple should have had a problem with it initially, but now like we've got a scenario where there is. It's basically this widget. It allows you to create a new draft or create a new draft from what's on your clipboard. Like, what is going on here? Like, why is this a problem? I don't understand.
What really concerns me is not just about the fact that Apple approves and then rejects an app. Like, that concerns me. But the worst part for me is that in both Peacock's and Draft's case, these are apps that Apple featured on the App Store with banners and feature sections. Like, there was a person who put the app into a section to promote it to millions of people. And the, yeah. and the, there's another person at Apple who says, no, this app is, we don't like it.
So that yeah, maybe shows, he opened the app like, store. Yeah, this shows a disconnect between review and editorial. Like,
which shouldn't shouldn't happen. No. Shouldn't be the case, especially after Mr. Cook fired poor Scott Forstall to focus on collaboration, and now Forstall is, you know, without a job, and there's no collaboration between teams in this specific case about the App Store.
Yeah, and maybe he's building a social network.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he's behind the new... Did you guys see the new Wire thing?
I've downloaded it. I haven't tried it.
Okay. So, yeah, it is weird. Like, I can understand why Neato, you know, with a fake keyboard, I kind of get why that's kind of strange, you know? I can understand why Apple may want to pull that kind of app. But all these other apps that were previously approved, featured, promoted by Apple on Twitter, Facebook, the Facebook page, on the App Store, and now they gotta remove these features. That's worrying. You know, that's not a good sign. And you guys asked, why is this happening? So I got a bunch of theories on Twitter last night. Basically, one of the leading theories seems to be that because the glances on the upcoming Apple Watch will be similar to widgets, the idea is that Apple wants some consistency between widgets on iOS and widgets on the Apple Watch. This is all a theory, so don't be upset at me.
Yeah,
I didn't come up with a theory.
Like, the problem with that theory is then you allowed Peacock back in, and Peacock is
it's
the worst possible thing because it's just all buttons. It's a sea of buttons, right? Which is too big for like.
And it wouldn't make any sense anyway to enforce this kind of consistency, forced consistency between devices that are different. I mean, of course I want to be able to have a different widget and a different app on my iPad because the screen is bigger. And I want to have different widgets on the iPhone. And I want to have glances on the Apple Watch. I want to have software that makes sense, that is unique to each platform. And if this... if anything remotely close to this theory is the case at Apple, that's seriously misguided, I think, and it doesn't make much sense. And there are a bunch of other theories, like that Apple internally they decided that the main problem is to either launch other apps, like Stephen, for instance, you develop an app called Old Mac, and your app Old Mac is able to launch other apps such as Twitter, Facebook, and Google Chrome because it's an application launcher. And now Apple goes to Stephen and says, "Hey, Stephen, you need to pull Old Mac from the App Store because it can launch other apps." And you're like, "Okay, I won't launch any other external app anymore. I will just launch my own app, and that's fine." In Draft's case, the problem is that not only does it launch Draft's, but it pre-populates a screen with content, which is the clipboard. This is a theory that if Drafts was only able to launch the app and restore its original state without adding any new content, without switching automatically to the draft creation screen, that would be okay. But again, this is a theory, and even if it's true, doesn't make any practical sense to remove this functionality from an application on the App Store. I'm coming up short with excuses. It's confusing, and Apple should have a clear policy, especially, you know, because developers are investing time to create this stuff. You know, people like Greg and like James Thompson of Peacock, they spent time creating these widgets, and all of a sudden they're not okay anymore. And there's all this back and forth, and it's really not cool.
Right. Well, and it stems from Apple's own language in the developer documents being vague. I mean, in the iOS developer library, they say, you know, you should design a simple, streamlined UI that highlights the information users are interested in. In general, it's a good idea to limit the number of interactive items in a widget. Like, that doesn't say what you can or can't do. It just says, you know, should and good idea. And in that vacuum of really clear boundaries, developers are going to push the bar, right? They're going to push things forward and try to make things more useful and more powerful until someone at Apple, to Mike's point, who maybe didn't even know this was a thing, steps in and says, hey, you know what? This is not really in the spirit of what we want. And it not only is obviously damaging to developers, like, it's bad for the ecosystem. Like, iOS needs to be more powerful, and guys like Greg and his apps and extensions like Clips, where I can have, sort of not really a multi-clipboard, but have a place to easily shuttle things around. Like, those make the iPhone and iPad more useful and more powerful. Mm-hmm. And Apple stripping that away, like, limits what their devices can do. Like, these devices are only as good as the software that runs on them, period. And to make that dumbed down from what it could be, like, it's, you know, what was so great, what is so great about today widgets is they are completely optional, right? Like, if someone never knows that about drafts or never knows about some of these widgets that can do crazy things, like, Apple isn't polluting or complicating iOS itself, but those tools and those apps should be available for those of us who want to use them, because, you know, it's our device. We can add widgets and we can add things and do crazy things. And that's fine. Like, give us the option. It's really a win-win for Apple. Power users get what they want. And, like, without Apple itself cluttering up iOS. And instead they're saying, oh no, this doesn't work for us. We don't want those sea of buttons. So let's step back on this rule. And my guess is that this isn't over. I think that,
yeah,
I think that either way, I think Apple will clear up the language and they will either come down on this hard and say, no, you can't do these things, or they're going to do what Apple normally does in this situation, is after a while they'll say, okay, and like, okay, public, you're right. You know, we're going to allow this, but sort of do it begrudgingly. But it's like another example. Like, the longer we do this show and the longer I write about this, like, there's so many reasons why I don't want to be a developer. And, like, this is one of them. Like, oh, I put all this time in this thing, and now I've got to shelve it because a rule changed somewhere with a middle manager at Apple.
My understanding is that, as you said, there's some people at Apple, like high-level managers, who are philosophically against the idea of using widgets as launchers of any kind, because they envisioned widgets as a display of a short bit of information. But that also, if that's the case, at least what I heard, if that's the case, even the WWDC widget didn't really help to reinforce that kind of vision, because at WWDC they showed an eBay widget to bid on items. It wasn't exactly a lightweight widget to display a short amount of information. It was right. A full-on utility notification center, and it was not about notifications.
And it
or,
had
you know,
a
today.
Button in it. No.
Yes. So I think that Apple, they may be against the idea of people using launchers to replicate the home screen experience. They may be against the idea of using buttons and, you know, apps and widgets to launch other apps and stuff. But I think it's too late, you know, to limit iOS 8 widgets to the functionality that Apple may be envisioning. I think it is too late, because this is not just about a bunch of indie developers. This is not just about drafts or pCalc or other companies, other apps from small companies and small independent studios. Take a look at a widget, something like Evernote, for instance, which is full of buttons. It's able to create new notes from the Today widget, and not only new blank notes, but Evernote can also add a check mark to a note as you tap a button in Notification Center. So Evernote is a big company, and there are many other examples of big studios, big developers, big name applications using widgets to launch and do stuff, you know? So it may be, you know, too late, and of course, Apple cannot do the thing where they say, okay, yeah, Evernote and Facebook and all these other big guys, they can, and you guys cannot. So I think we will see some clarification, but I hope that they will just, you know, back off and just allow this kind of functionality.
I think the problem is now they've let it get away from them. And
yeah,
That's the problem. That's the problem. Anywho.
Yeah, I mean, it's out in the market, right? Like, if you come out of the gate with iOS 8 and said, hey, today widgets, like, these are the very clear boundaries of what you can do, like, then that's fine, right? If a developer steps over that line and Apple smacks them down, like, okay, I get that, right? Like, you set the rule, the developer broke the rule, you don't allow it. But when it's already in the store, and not, it's not like one or two things, and it's the Peacock thing in particular is pretty bad from like an Apple PR perspective, because they came out and allowed it, and now just 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, they're saying, oh, you know, I don't know if they've rendered a verdict on Peacock now, but like similar things aren't allowed, and that's sort of like case by case, developer by developer, reviewer by reviewer type approach to this is just,
yeah,
it's not good. I mean, because it's like, you know, Drafts is a big app. Peacock is a huge app. Like these are well-known developers and well-known products. And like, I would not want to be a truly little guy in this fight, because maybe you get exemptions from Apple for your app, but if you don't know anyone at Apple, you can't convince them to do it. Like just have the rules clearly defined and everybody can play by the rules. And like in that structure, great freedom is granted. And they need to get on the ball and clarify what they're going to let people do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the problem is that Apple, honestly, the problem is that Apple doesn't have clear guidelines on widgets. They don't even know themselves what they want or what they allow on the App Store. So there's one guy who said, yeah, this is not cool. And the other guy says, yeah, this is cool, you know?
Yeah, which is troublesome.
Yeah.
And I wonder
maybe if... Maybe a problem.
Maybe they didn't foresee people using it like this, you know? I wonder sometimes, you know, when Apple's developing new things, it's generally a very small groups of people, and I fear that Apple has a little bit of groupthink in some of this stuff, and they say, oh no, you know, they don't like the idea of Peacock or Drafts, and today like never even crossed anyone's mind, and so now that it's happened, they're like, oh, crud, you know, like if it's a surprise to Apple that people are trying to do this, like that's the worst case scenario in my mind, because it's clear there's something wrong with the way that they're going about adding these features to their software. But even if that's not the case, it's definitely unsettling. And like another example of like, the App Store is so big, it's so popular. This thing has a life beyond what Cupertino dreams up, and they just don't manage it well when this sort of thing happens, and they need to be better at it.
Federico,
Mike,
to make us feel a little bit better, mm-hmm. Can you tell people where they find the show notes?
Are you sure about that? Yeah, because I've been thinking about, you know, I've been thinking like what if I had to explain my dad what show notes are, mm-hmm. like what would I tell my parents about, you know, show notes?
Yep.
Like why do I spend time telling people to where the show notes are when I cannot describe show notes to the rest of the population of this planet. So basically, every time we get together, me and Steven and Mike, we assemble this collection of links, right? We talk about stuff, and then to prove that the stuff we talk about exists, we link to it. And so basically, what you want to do is... You want to take your Sony Vaio notebook, or I guess also an Acer, or you know, an HP
Chromebook.
Would be okay.
Maybe a Chromebook. You know,
no, those are too fancy. No, oh. we roll old school, okay. with these. You go to the web browser. I would say Mozilla, Firefox would be okay. You know, because it's open source and it's got themes. Mm-hmm. So you go to the web, and you go to the website, which is relay.fm, and you type a slash, which is the, you know, the little line character, and you add connected, which is the name of the show that we do, and then you add another slash character, and you type 16 as a number.
The numbers, the numbers. Yeah.
Because apparently we've been doing this new show on relay.fm for 16 episodes now, and so when you get to the page, You will find our photos as a confirmation that we are actual people talking, you know. This is not a computer-generated voice. At least I hope that you two are humans as well. And you will find the show notes, which are called notes. You know, they're called show notes, but actually it's just like a show list of links, mm-hmm. Which is great. Sometimes there's a picture, you know, and they... This is getting more difficult every time. I hate you, Mike. Yeah,
your dad is definitely confused now.
No, Dad, please don't be confused. I can come home and teach you how to browse the show notes. So the show notes are an essential piece of the Relay experience, mm-hmm. and you should be able to enjoy the full Relay FM experience as Mike and Steven intended, and. Me, I will just provide with the instructions to get to the show notes, and we promise as a network, right, mm-hmm. that we will always do. We are renewing our commitment to the show notes.
Yes, renew commitment.
Right. So yeah, that's how you find the show notes, which is a list of links, but still, you know, you gotta click them to view the source page in your web browser.
Thanks, Teach. I appreciate the explanation. If you'd like to find us online, other than those show notes, which now you definitely know how to get to, we're all on Twitter, the perfect social network for all of us. I am at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E. Federico is at the Teach, V-I-T-I-C-C-I. Stephen is at ISMH. The show is at _ConnectedFM, and it's the only account that's updated. Well, actually, no, Jason is kind of... He's taken the upgrade account and does stuff with it, which is great.
Yeah, I got to fire the other hosts.
It's pretty much my fault completely.
Mm-hmm.
But hey-ho, it's all good.
Tally-ho.
Stephen writes at 512pixels.net. Federico writes maxstories.net. And I host many shows on Relay FM. Thank you so much for listening, especially if you listen this far. Like, if you go this far, I'm very proud of you. Because, yeah. You know, I do this bit every week, and if you've clearly stayed to see if there's anything special at the end, and there is something special for you, Kyle. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next time. Bye-bye.
Arrivederci.
Adios.
Oh, thanks to our sponsors too. Linda, yeah. Hover, Iconic, thanks. We love you. Bye.
Awesome people.
Bye-bye.